Hello and welcome to Theatre Voice. I'm Alex Sears and my guest today is the director and teacher Mike Alfreds, who is one of the outstanding theatre makers of his generation. Alfreds was born in London and trained as a director in Pittsburgh. He's worked in the United States, Israel and indeed all over the world. In the UK, he is chiefly known for his work in founding Shared Experience in 1975 and running the company for 13 years. He was also artistic director of another company, Method and Madness, and has directed for all the flagship theatres in Britain, from the RSC to the National, staging, at the last count, more than 200 productions. His book, Different Every Night, published by Nick Hearn, came out last year. Welcome to Theatre Voice, Mike Alfreds.
Hello, Alex.
Let's start at the beginning. Could you say something about why you decided to write this book and what it's all about?
Yes, initially, well not initially, over the years, a lot of actors or theatre people have said, have you written this down? After they've done a rehearsal with me or come to a workshop, have you written it down? And I said, no. Who wants another book about theatre? You know, we all say the same thing, play your objectives, be truthful and so forth and so on. And it sort of built up and accumulated, and over 25 years ago, Nick Hearn said to me, he was then working for Mathewin, editing their theatre publications, "What would you like to write a book?" And I said, okay. And to cut a very long story short, I'd start, then stop because I was busy directing, and then I'd lose confidence or interest, and every 10 years or so we'd have another meeting and I'd sort of fire up again and start again. And I kept a lot of tapes that he transcribed for me, and nothing happened. And then about 5 years ago I started again, and I sort of crossed a barrier and found I was sort of enjoying it, and I kept going. I didn't know whether Nick would be interested anymore. Anyway, I got a bulk of it done, sent it to him. He was very enthusiastic, and so I did it. And it seemed to me that it was going to be quite a useful book, and it was also quite a selfish thing, because I thought to myself, well, it may not get published, but it's helping me to clarify my thoughts and to see if I can put them down in some sort of coherent way. And ideally, if it works out, it will be very useful technically for actors and directors. I've always been frustrated with most of the theatre books, acting books I've read, because they go so far, they never go into detail, they're not specific enough about exactly what they did, how the exercise works. So I thought, I'm going to be very, very specific, and I've tried to be that. So hopefully it's useful.
Yeah, definitely. There's so many examples of particular pieces of text which you analyse and then show how the actors could work on them. But in general, let's focus on the general project of the book, which is that you define theatre as basically about actors and about actors and their relationship to the audience. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. That's what theatre is. It's not about playwrights. In spite of our wonderful reputation and our tradition of Shakespeare and so forth, which sits on us, you know, sort of squashes us from above, doesn't it? Takes the breath out of us. Without actors, there is no theatre. You can write as many plays, you can design the sets, you can have directors sitting around. Until you've got the actors, there's no theatre. And the actors are what gives the theatre life. Theatre, my big thing is that theatre is live. So what does that mean? And for years, that's been my sort of search and research and pursuit for myself, to say, if theatre is live, the great cliche, you know, live theatre.
Yeah.
What does it mean? How do you exploit it? Because most of the theatre I go to see, I think, is actually dead.
Yeah, it's like Peter Brook in The Empty Space calling something deadly theatre.
Deadly theatre, and it's brilliant, yes. And he did that 40 years ago, and people still don't see the difference. Anyway, the life can only be in the actors, which means that you've got to develop a system of working in which the actors can have a freedom to be spontaneous, immediate, being there, in the moment, as we say, as things are happening, not just regurgitating something they rehearsed, you know, because that's a sort of virtual reality. It's actually a sort of, I don't know, it's a sort of zombie walking around, as far as I'm concerned. So the work is very much about sort of, what shall I say, favouring the actor, in not favouring, that's the wrong word.
Well, focusing on.
Focusing on and exploiting the best sense possible the people who are going to give you live theatre.
Yeah, and they are, after all, the kind of human material.
They are. You know, theatre is the most human of all the arts, as far as I'm concerned. You know, there's a good definition of it. It's, theatre is one group of people watching another group of people pretending to be yet another group of people. And the raw material of theatre is human beings, all there together.
And in fact, in the book you point out that the difference between live theatre and, for example, live sport is that you're asking, the actors rather, are asking the audience to collaborate in an act of imagination.
Yes.
And to believe that the actors are actually characters in a story.
Yes, well, that's the nature of it, and that's the wonderful thing, and it's a very deep thing within us, and I don't think it's exploited. It's saying to the actors, look, we're all human beings. We're essentially no different from each other. Actors have certain talents, but those talents are implicit and potential within every human being. I believe that all human beings have the ability to act at some level, because that means empathizing, sympathizing, identifying with. Otherwise, we couldn't read books from the past or foreign books. There is something which brings us all together in spite of our individual cultures. And theatre manifests that, and it's such a thrilling and wonderful thing. And it has to come through the live actor. So the actor says to the audience, OK, I'm like you, but you're going to believe I'm somebody else. And the wonderful thing of theatre is this duality of the experience. You're sitting in the theatre, you know you're in the theatre, you know you're watching actor A and actor B and Sir this and Lady that and Dame Blue, blah, 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 blah. But at the same time, if they're good, they're making you believe they're somebody else, and you're playing that game because you want to. So you're experiencing two things, which is very thrilling. At one level, subjectively, you're getting very involved in a story and identifying with the characters and being moved and interested. At another level, you're appreciating the skill of the actor. And those things should be in a wonderful balance. And that is a very thrilling and total experience. Wonderful, exhilarating. I can't think of anything more thrilling when it's absolutely happening.
In the book, what's interesting is you give this example, this very clear example of the audience imagination. I think it was with one of the early shared experience productions, Bleak House,
yes, that's right,
where it was lit just completely without any effects.
Yeah.
And yet audience members would come up to you afterwards or a few weeks afterwards and say, how did you light it? You know, I remember candlelight and the beautiful way the fire glowed and everything. But actually, it was just ordinary light.
There was white light on the audience and the actors together in one space. There was not one single light cue. And the lighting never changed, you know, for the 10 hours, four nights of that show. And because of the... And it was in an empty space. There was no scenery. There were just six actors playing 120 characters doing this enormous Bleak House, you know, Dickens novel.
Yeah.
And the skill and imagination and commitment of the actors encouraged the audience to see their own show. You see, what I'm trying to say about this relationship is not that the actor tells the audience what to think, what to see, how to feel. They offer something up, and it's for the audience to be their own, to be also creative and imaginative, to allow their imagination to flower. So five people can see the same show and come away with different experiences which are appropriate to them. So people who let themselves be open to the experience saw light that wasn't there, saw gaslight, gaslit streets and the fires, the things you mentioned, and it was very thrilling. And they also interpreted the material differently. Mm. So somebody will say, well, that was a really good political evening, and somebody would say, oh, what a lovely story. And somebody would say, God, it's funny, or somebody would say, oh, God, it's so Kafkaesque, and so forth. Because they filtered it through their own cultural framework. Mm. And that seems absolutely right. I hate theatre where the audience is nudged to say, you know, it's a laugh here. Oh, this is the sad bit. Oh, this is the serious bit. And I must all sit up and get the theme. Have you got the theme? Nah, this is the funny bit, you know, and they manipulate the audience. Mm. I think I've quoted in my book that Howard Barker, I remember reading him saying somewhere that he thought musical comedies are the most fascistic form of entertainment because they bully the audience into feeling a certain way. Mm. You know, if it's loud and noisy and...
That's the moment of glory.
You can't get away from it. You
if
know.
It's a sad violin,
yes.
It should be.
Wasn't there a musical where they had the seats vibrating or something? And you know, you thought like, oh my God, you know, this is horrible. No, I think it should be totally democratic, and the audience can react in any way they can. I remember when I used to, you know, I've toured frequently. Most of my career has been touring, and I remember when we were on tour with the Revenge's Tragedy, you know, which is a Jacobean. Play, wonderful thriller. I talk to audiences after shows often, have you know, meet, you know, after show chats. But at one place, I had to talk to them before, and I hate talking to people before they see the show.
Yeah, it's sort of skewers their expectations.
Yes. So I said, look, I'm not going to say one thing to you, but all I want to say is, look, it's called The Revenge's Tragedy, so don't let that title get in your way. Don't think because of the tragedy you've got to sit there very solemnly. And if you want to laugh, laugh. If you want to cry, cry. If you want to shout at the actors, shout. And if you want to go, go. Well, all I can tell you, that audience gave us the best response I've ever had to that production up to that point, because they started laughing at what is a very sourly, witty, ironic, sharp
And
play.
You've given them permission
I've
to do
I've given them
that.
Permission to react in any way they wanted to. And and I think that a lot of people who go to theatre habitually are terribly sort of indoctrinated into behaving in a certain way. Mm. You know, they know how to behave. They know what is meant to be good theatre. And I think they accept a lot of bad material as part of the process. You know, they're going to be bored. And just a little addendum to that is that when we used to tour with shared experience in the early days, we used to go all over the country, and we go to places where often they don't see theatre at all. And I remember some guy coming up to me after a production, I can't remember what it was, and saying to me, oh, that's about the fourth time I've ever been to theatre, and it was terrific, he said to me. You were trying to do this and this, and you were saying this and this with this show, weren't you? And he got in one what all the London critics didn't get at all. And I thought, yes, there it goes. He was open. He came without any agenda, open to respond, and it was fantastic. And I think that's one of the problems with theatre as well.
To return to your book, Different Every Night, that's the title. Could you unpack that a
little absolutely. For us? You see, it's totally unnatural for us to keep repeating the same thing over and over again. The idea that you work on a play, you make decisions, oh, let's play it like, let's play that speech like this and this line like this, and here you're going to cry and you're going to do it this way and then you're going to move and sit down. It's terribly reductive. It means that the best that the director and the actors can come up with is one choice which they think is better than all the others, and then they polish it and then they just keep repeating it. Well, the life will go out of it. You'll just get the slick technical externals, but the motivation, which might have been found at rehearsal, will die. And if theatre wants to be live, and this is the key issue, really, of live theatre, is the actor has to be prepared to go on stage every night and respond to what is actually happening. If your partner does something slightly different tonight, which he should or she should be able to do, then you can't respond the way you did 5 weeks ago in rehearsal. You've got to go with what's there. Now, if you respond differently, which is natural and human and alive, to what you're getting, your partner has to again reciprocate, and then the whole thing starts shifting and moving, and it is fresh and immediate and truthful. So 75% of my work is about trying to create a rehearsal process in which the actors can have enough of an inner, internal structure which holds them so they are capable of virtually improvising. Mm. The text does not change, but how the text is played and how a scene is played and how it's moved and how it sounds can vary from night to night depending on how the play progresses and how the actors respond truthfully to each other and to the audience. And that's it. And therefore the show should be different every night. That should be what you expect.
Mm. And yet, so often it isn't. And can we discuss some of the reasons? I mean, clearly, yes. It's fear, is it?
Fear and ego.
Yeah.
Yeah, the two, and they sort of go together in some weird way.
Mm.
Yes, actors want to be loved, they want to be saved. Acting is a very dangerous profession. Yeah. You are exposing yourself when you get up in front of X number of people and have to reveal your feelings, your body, your looks, your taste, your judgment. You are exposing yourself in a way which most actors really don't think about when they go into the profession.
Yeah.
And probably can spend their profession not thinking about.
Yeah.
Okay, so what they do is they find out, often subconsciously, semi-consciously, consciously, what works with an audience.
Yes.
So they know they can get laughs, or they've got charm, or they've got pretty little winning ways, and they will cling to them like mad. And you can watch very famous starry people who were wonderfully brave when they started out in their careers. And as they go further on, you see the same clichés going on and on. You might as well not go and see the actor anymore because you know the performance you're going to get from them, because
in advance,
they will not dare to open themselves up in any serious way. They play it safe because they're frightened. Okay, and they want to be good and they want to be pleased and they want to get their lives and they want to score points during the production. I get my laugh here, I get the audience to cry there, I get a little gasp out of them here, I get the applause at the end. And that should not be the motive of going to the theatre, of playing a role. You should play a role in order to give the audience something truthful. So it's totally distorted. Okay, from the director's point of view, the director wants to show off, look at my clever idea. So my clever idea means I've got to have the lighting this way, the sound that way, the actors have got to be physically like this in these clothes, and they've got to play a moment which fulfills my conception of the play. Therefore, they all lock themselves into these awful things. And of course there can be a big conflict between what the actor wants, the actor's ego and fears, and the director's egos and fears. And so there are terrible arguments and fights and competition and conflict in rehearsals, which are totally unnecessary if we're all trying to let the thing be free and alive and juicy and flowing.
But there are implications from what you're saying, and I'm sure it's true. I mean, how often have we heard actors say, I've now discovered what the role was really like after the run has finished,
yes,
because the subconscious creativity that's natural and spontaneous in a human being suddenly comes flooding out.
Well, it's free, because if you've been working, being told what to do, you're locked.
Yeah.
You're in prison. It's actually the whole conventional way of working, which I mean is fixing things, you know, blocking things, setting things, working it all out, and then, you know, more or less repeating it, every night, you know, through the entire run of a play, is deadly.
Yeah.
It's result orientated. It means there could be no spontaneity, no life, no discovery. It's a sort of prison. It's the other way is freedom. So if you're working, in that locked way, the subconscious, you say, is not free.
Yeah.
It's locked. As soon as the restrictions of the production are released, when you finish the play, suddenly the subconscious says, hang on a minute, oh, that's what that scene was about. Oh my God, that's how that line's about, because they've had permission. You see, I've got this great theory, and it's worked for me a couple of times when I've had the economic possibilities of doing it. To rehearse a play up to a certain point, to then say, oh, let's go away and do something else totally different
for three or four weeks
and forget about this play, allow whatever happens in your subconscious to happen. Then we'll come back and work on it again. And of course, all sorts of wonderful things have happened. So when the actors come back to the play again, it's richer, it's fuller, it's more interesting, because one of our problems is our real creativity comes from our subconscious or unconscious.
Yeah.
We cannot conjure up our unconscious consciously to order.
Yeah, if I ask you to be creative now, what are you going to do? You're going to be completely
frozen. It happens
frozen.
To you. So, again, part of my rehearsal process is trying to put the actors into a state where, all things being equal, that their creativity, their subconscious, unconscious creativity will have a channel through which to be released. And then you just work on the hope that that will happen.
Yeah.
Because you see, there's two sorts of imagination. One is the clever mind, the intellectual things. I've got a good idea. That's fine and very useful.
Yeah.
But the real creativity is the spontaneous thing that comes from, I don't know, from where? From the gut, which suddenly makes a choice. You often have something wonderful happen on the spur of the moment in rehearsal. And afterwards the actor said, I don't know where, it was wonderful, I just did it.
Yeah.
And you say, well, that's the best sort of work.
Mm.
So again, I define that by saying, the actor has to not make things happen, but allow things to happen. The actor has to be both out of, in control and out of control.
At the same time.
At the same time. It's very difficult. And really to be out of control, to take the risk, to let things go. It's very Zen-like in a way. You know, trust that if you do certain things could happen.
And Mike, one of the things you haven't mentioned as yet is that the actual audience can tell the difference. And you give that brilliant example of the actor whose hat fell on the floor.
Yes.
Can you go through that one again?
Yes. This was a production of a Viennese play at the Old Vic with quite a distinguished actor in a main role. He was sitting in a chair with his hat on his lap and the hat fell on the floor. He made no effort to retrieve it, nor did his partner in the scene. They pretended it hadn't happened. They kept playing the scene. And you could feel the audience getting more and more tenser and more embarrassed. And our focus was going more and more towards that hat. Because it was the only thing that was alive. It was sitting there saying, pick me up, pick me up. And these two other actors were dead. Because they couldn't spontaneously react to something because they had been programmed to say the lines in a certain way. And it was an embarrassing and humiliating and awful example of bad acting, pretending to be professional. Or it was just disgusting.
Yeah, and the audience actually could tell. That's
well,
the
you felt it. Yes, you see, I think the audience can tell, but the problem is a regular theatre-going audience is so used to seeing a certain sort of work and so busy having been told that such and such is a good actor that they accept what they see as truthful. They watch totally phony displays of bad emotion, artificial emotion, false emotion, and accept it as truthful. And sometimes I think I want to sort of scream at them. How can you believe that? You know, because that's not the way people express their emotions in real life.
Exactly. And after all, what we see on the stage, although it's not real life, it's fiction, should in some way connect with.
No, I think theatre's got to be real. It's got to be truthful. Not realistic, but it's got to be truthful.
That's right.
It's got to have a truth so you recognise it and you watch the humanity in it.
Mm.
You know, when you watch a lot of actors work themselves up in a state of tension to be emotional. So they can't breathe properly, their voices get tight, you see all the veins and tendons standing up in their necks, they go red in the face, and people say, oh, they were so emotional. Well, actually, in real life, we are not like that. When we're emotional, it's a release. Things go.
Yeah.
Things let go.
Yeah.
It's very, very different. Yeah. And I despair of most of the theatre I see. I think it's awful.
Well, I must admit, after reading this book and seeing a few productions recently, I was trying to concentrate on how often actors actually looked at other actors on the stage. And actually, it was very rare. It was very rare to see them actually recognise in each other's eyes, even in a small studio theatre, what was going on. Is that the kind of thing you were talking about?
Yes, exactly. I mean, you've hit it on the head totally, bullseye, Alex. Yes, you know, they don't work together. They pretend to work together. It's very polite. I'll pretend to believe you, and you'll pretend to believe me. But we won't mess each other up. We won't actually dare to let ourselves go and really respond. And you. Actors will say that when they get a good partner, it is wonderful. You can feel it, the flow, the fluidity. And your response as an audience is this. You're sitting watching a show and you're thinking, yes, it's quite good, it's quite good. And then if something really wonderful happens, you suddenly are sitting up and you are totally involved. It's as though somebody's grabbed you by the, you know, by the coat lapels and pulled you towards the stage, and it is wonderful. I think I've given an example in the book. It's in a little postscript or something, in a note. There was a production of A Doll's House with Janet McTeer. It's a Playhouse Theatre, and it's a play I know very well. It's a wonderful play. I've always been moved by it. I've seen it many, many times. And here I was going to see it again in a very good, perfectly realistic production. I think fancy. And she was phenomenal. She was so alive that she had very good other actors with her who responded, I'm sure, to her energy. So there was this huge vitality, and I sat in my seat really forward and up, thinking, oh, don't do that, don't say that, oh, don't play it like that, don't say that, don't do that. I got so engaged with this character as though I was seeing the play for the first time, and I came out of the theatre and I said to the person I'd gone with, my God, I can still believe in theatre, how wonderful, because I'm shaking, because it was so alive.
Yeah.
And that's what, 5 years ago, and I can't remember since then seeing anything like it, and that's what's so discouraging for me.